Francis is the most dangerous individual I've ever encountered. His delusions are so impenetrable, he is effectively untreatable.
And this girl died of asphyxia?
She had her mobile phone stuck in her throat. The second was nearly strangled.
Do you lie?
Only to myself.
I'm interested in people who can't explain what they saw.
You mean ghosts?
This is Calvin Lantus. He's acutely sensitive to noise.
He'll shoot you.
I'm telling you, Sergeant! Get out of my way!
It's not Lantus.
You are that close to being killed.
A face with wide manic staring eyes and protruding tongue leers on a tattoo. In grainy typed lettering, Whitechapel. Etched illustrations from an old book show another tongue-poking demon clutching a wide-eyed victim. Rupert Penry Jones. A grinning mask crumples in flames. Phil Davis. A black leather-gloved hand flexes its fingers. Steve Pemberton. The pallid grey skin and sullen features of an oversized mask. Tower Bridge lit up. Chandler splashes his face and puts on shaving cream. He uses an old-fashioned razor. Chandler pulls his shirt on as Miles comes into the Stark lavatories.
The roof was clear. Mantis got away.
Yeah.
Miles shuts himself into a cubicle. The shooting victim lies on his back in the morgue. Chandler and Miles talk to Llewellyn through the observation window.
Blythe Haddart.
19 years old, gang affiliated, suspected of firearms offences but never convicted.
Well, if this lad had the real thing, why did he have a toy gun wired to his right hand?
Someone's idea of a joke.
We recovered a handgun from the roof. It was a revolver. It's a gun that Blythe's been seen with in the past, so we can assume that Mantis took the gun from Blythe and used it to initiate the firefight.
CO-19 responded with lethal force. Two bullets to the chest, perfectly placed. In all likelihood, he was dead before he hit the ground.
Mantis, with his family around the dinner table, but Sasha in front of the TV, he tied a ribbon around Morgan's neck and paraded this last victim in the street. It's all about staging.
Like scenes from horror movies.
Well, it's tableau. Dead babysitter, a murder in a deserted car park, police standoff.
Now, wait a minute. When Mantis murdered his family, he didn't try to hide it. He didn't even go on the run. He just sat there and enjoyed the quiet. And now he's escaped from a noisy psychiatric unit. Why come back into the city just to murder teenagers? I mean, where's the peace and quiet in that?
You don't think Mantis is the killer?
I think it's possible the killer's someone else.
Chandler looks at Miles and turns away. Distorted images of a figure in a Ripper-style mask. Chandler shakes hands with a young black man.
Thanks for coming in, Tyrone. I know this is a very difficult time for you and your family.
Blythe was your younger brother.
Yeah. He was a baby in the family.
Do you know who might want to harm Blythe in this way?
Mad Mantis. He's back. He did this.
Why would Mantis want to target Blythe?
When Blythe was little, he used to play around outside Mantis's house, shouting and screaming, just to get Mantis to come to the door looking really mad. All the kids did it.
Mantis knew him?
Of course. Blythe sat next to Daisy in Miss Thompson's class. When Mantis killed Daisy, Blythe couldn't sleep at night. He thought Mantis was going to climb in through the windows.
Did Blythe know Sasha Lowood?
Yeah. She was in Miss Thompson's class too.
Morgan Lamb?
Don't know that name.
You sure?
Was it?
Morgan's strangulation. Chandler briefs the team before the incident board.
The killings are not random. Sasha and Blythe were in the same year six class as Daisy Mantis. Now, there were 19 children in Miss Thompson's class. We can assume that each one of those children is a potential victim. I want every child in that class identified and contacted tonight.
Well, that makes sense, but what about Morgan? She doesn't fit into your theory.
Mantis targeted her. He tied a ribbon around her neck for a reason. There will be a link, we just haven't found it.
Sir, this is just in. The press haven't named the three victims, but they have reported that the second victim survived. Mantis will now know that Morgan's still alive.
And when I brought back in straight away.
Done.
Morgan turns on her shower. Black, leather-gloved hands creep behind a policeman guarding her flat. Morgan strikes a match and lights the wick of a thick candle. She lets her dressing gown fall to the floor as she walks towards the bathroom. As Morgan steps through her shower curtain, a figure in a black leather jacket descends the staircase to her basement flat, wearing a grey, oversized head mask, a gloved hand on the window. Morgan turns her back to the water. The figure gazes around inside her living room. The figure cocks its head sideways and lifts an opera mask up to cover its eyes. Dropping the opera mask away, the figure reaches for an ornamental bird with long, sharp beak on a bookshelf. Gripping the body, the figure makes stabbing motions with the beak. The figure lays the bird aside and stalks towards the kitchen. Morgan closes her eyes in the shower. In the kitchen, the figure takes a small knife from a block. He replaces it and pulls out a long carving knife. He turns for the bathroom. Turns off the light and stalks along the corridor, gripping the knife with the blade pointing downwards. Stepping in through the open door, he slashes at the shower curtain. The shower is empty. Morgan lurches from the bedroom and locks him in the bathroom. She sprints out as the figure kicks the door open. Morgan hesitates for a moment, seeing the coffee guarding her flat slumped on the stairs. His mobile phone screen is showing an incoming call from DC Riley, then hands over his body and dashes away through the gardens in her dressing gown. The figure emerges from the flat and lopes after her with the knife. Figure stalks towards a bush, hearing a noise. The figure spins and peers across the park towards bushes opposite and creeps slowly towards them. Morgan lurches from behind with a log and smashes him on the head. The figure falls and drops the knife, but catches hold of Morgan's ankle as she turns to flee. She stabs the knife into his leg. Morgan turns and runs as the figure yanks the knife from his thigh. Morgan's eyelashes are matted with tears as fibers are lifted from her dressing gown. The figure tourniquets his leg. The figure binds his wound with duct tape, dirt from under Morgan's nails. Morgan's interviewed.
Well, that's twice now. Third time lucky he gets to kill me.
It won't be a third time. I promise.
Morgan smiles at Chandler. Kent frowns as he glances at him.
Two of the victims were classmates, Steeple Park Primary. Do you have any connection with the school?
No.
Did you know Daisy Mantis at all?
No. I've had nothing to do with Calvin Mantis or his family outside of lecture theatre.
Was it interesting studying Mantis?
It was fascinating, yeah. He's a man who appears to function normally, even though he lived within this complex delusion.
No one knew what he was thinking.
Some people can hide their true intentions very well.
I think you're hiding yours.
What gave you that impression?
You're being targeted for a reason. Someone you know is capable of murdering a teenage girl, torturing a boy to death, and trying to kill you, yet you claim not to have any idea who that could be.
Well, if I knew, I would tell you.
Would you?
Outside in the lobby.
Kent! Kent! What the hell was that?
I'm sorry, I just got carried away.
Don't you know the difference between a suspect and a witness?
I know, I'm sorry.
It's like everyone's losing their bloody minds.
Chandler has the team back in front of the board.
To be worth risking a second attack, Morgan must be important.
But she has no connection to Mantis.
We know of.
Look, if you attack someone twice, it's personal, you know them.
If killing Morgan's so important, why isn't she dead?
She was lucky.
Extraordinarily lucky, I'd say. fighting off two murderous attacks, even managing to stab the killer in the leg, though no knife was found at the scene.
Mantis is linked to two of our victims. The murders are acts of silencing, a motive associated with Mantis. He's the only suspect we have. Does anyone else here have another suspect in mind? A name, a motive, a link to the victims? No? Right, well, let's work with what we have. Finish contacting the kids from Miss Thompson's class. It's 10 years on. Where are they?
Chandler marches out past the class photo from Steeple Park Primary on the board. A tall, lean young man in a hoodie makes his way down a dark alley. Glancing back at a passing police car, he pulls a bandana up to cover his lower face. Miles eyes the class picture while he's on the phone.
Hello, is that Chantel Essien? This is Detective Sergeant Ray Miles. You went to Steeple Park Primary School, didn't you, Miss Thompson's class?
Am I in danger?
Well, you need to stay where you are. We'll get a squad car around to take you somewhere safe.
Ed Madness wants to kill me.
Oh, come on, seriously?
Killed Sasha and Blythe already.
Pretty Chantel paces with her arms folded.
Oh my God, a dead man walking.
Morgan's in a white lab coverall in a police waiting room.
I heard you were back. Would you like some company?
Yeah, sure, come in. I've been given more cake than I can eat.
Oh, thanks.
Ed takes a slice and sits facing Morgan.
So, are you under orders to stay here?
For my own protection, yeah.
Well, don't worry, I'm sure it'll be over soon. These events tend to burn out quickly.
Well, this is what you do, isn't it? This is your area of expertise.
I tell them what I know, but ultimately it's out of my hands.
How do you feel about that?
Ed looks at her bashfully. The guy in the hoodie strolls down the back street under a railway arch and vaults over a building site hoarding. He lands by walls covered with graffiti tags on the other side. The hoodie sets his rucksack down and takes out spray canisters. Hoodie sets to work, graffitiing the wall, all the while watched by the figure who clutches a cutthroat razor.
People will die tonight, and I can do nothing to save them.
Ed, you can't tame the universe, and you shouldn't try. You're not God, yeah? You and I and everyone else in this world, we're just here for the ride. Now, this is important. You can't save everyone. Someone always has to die. That's the way it is.
Ed nods, his hands between his knees.
Thank you.
Blood pours onto the cobbles and drops from the figure's razor. Back at his desk, Ed wipes his nose with a handkerchief. Kent strides up behind him.
I need research.
What do you require?
I want files on spree killing couples.
I wasn't aware we were hunting a couple.
No, we're not, but we should be.
Here. Nebraska, 1957.
Kent snatches.
You're welcome. Charles Starkweather and Carolyn Fugate, they killed 11 in all.
Including parents and 2-year-old sister.
Yes, she was 14 at the time. She said that she was held hostage by Starkweather. He said she was a willing participant. And to this day, she's never spoken of the murder, so nobody knows how involved she actually was. Right. By all means, go out on a limb, but it is a lonely place.
Know what I'm doing.
Chandler and Miles arrive as Llewellyn takes shots at the bloody graffiti alley. They wander towards the crime scene under the railway bridge, where the Soko team in white overalls examine the blood and the guy's paint canisters. Llewellyn stands beside beside the figure of the hoodie dangling from the bridge by his ankles.
Do we know who he is?
Ronald Clement Solbay.
He was in Daisy Mantis's class. I tried calling him.
I know. You're on the voicemail. So, we have an incised wound extending around the neck, on the lower left side of the jaw, extending around the front of the neck and terminating below the lower right side of the jaw.
He was bled dry like an animal.
In essence, yeah.
And his blood was painted on the wall.
All 8 pints.
Chandler, Miles and Llewellyn stand and regard the silver graffiti tag completely covered by the blood.
There's been another murder.
Ronald Clement Solbay.
I don't know him.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. I recognise this tag. Is it his?
Yes, he was a prolific street artist.
What happened to him?
Morgan hands the photo back to Chandler.
He was exsanguinated. Mantis used his blood to paint over his graffiti.
Covering his art with his own blood is a way of destroying who he is.
Yes, silencing the artist. Mantis tried to silence you with red legal tape. Are you involved in any legal disputes?
No.
Protests, causes?
No, nothing like that.
Maybe because it's not Mantis.
Well, that's quite an atmosphere between you two.
Don't worry about it, it's the way we work.
Oh. Do you like working like this?
Love it.
And are you happy with the situation?
Chandler looks down and shakes his head.
No, I'm not.
Would you want to talk about it?
It's very kind of you to offer, but I don't expect you to fix it.
I'll talk. No problem. As soon as he apologises,
he can yap to the cows come home. Why should I apologise for trying to save a man's life?
You didn't listen. You went off half-cocked. You put yourself and others at risk and you could have got yourself killed.
Why do you have to worry about me so much? I mean, you're not my mother. You're always telling me what to do, always sticking your oar.
You know your problem? You got no wife and kids, so you think it doesn't matter what happens to you. You don't care.
But you do.
I have to. He hasn't got anyone else.
Chandler looks across at Miles.
You do realise, don't you? If you'd have got shot, the only person crying at your funeral is me.
I'm sorry you had to hear that.
It's natural when we feel threatened to want to assert our authority, impose rules.
Can't help himself, he doesn't even try.
I was talking about you.
Chandler rubs balm on his temples.
How many times have you changed your shirt today?
Three times. It would have been more, but I've run out.
Give me your hand.
She leans forward, offering him her hand.
Trust me.
Chandler frowns as he lays his hand in hers, palm upturned. She slips an elastic band over his fingers and down onto his wrist.
It's a thought stopper. When you feel the need to control things, you snap it hard. And you won't need to change your shirt or lay down the rules or whatever it is you do at the moment.
He flinches as he snaps the band against his wrist. She watches a tender smile spread across his face as he looks down at his wrist.
No one's ever...
Two Asian men brace themselves as Mantis walks into their corner shop warily. One of the men sees Mantis's photo on the front page of the paper he's reading. Mantis creeps along the aisles with a basket. Mantis grabs some duct tape and sticks it to his leg. He grabs a long screwdriver. The older shopkeeper peers down the aisle as Mantis grabs a box of popcorn. The younger man behind the counter takes hold of a baseball bat and primes himself, gripping the handle down at his side. Mantis wanders to a fisheye mirror and gazes up at himself. His reflection becomes that of a leering, top-hatted figure rubbing his hands together. Clutching the screwdriver, Mantis makes for the tail.
I can't move it, Dad. I can't think. You know me? Yeah? Yeah, I'm Calvin Mantis.
Yeah, of course, I remember you, Calvin. You used to come in here all the time.
Mantis points the screwdriver at his own chin.
Your duct tape isn't strong enough.
Sorry about that.
Make do, man.
The shopkeeper jumps up as Mantis shoves the basket of shopping across the counter at him. He scans it. Mantis points the screwdriver up at the till screen.
Yeah, I haven't got any money.
It's okay. It's not a problem. You're an old customer. You're welcome.
Mantis takes the bag and lopes off towards the door. He veers back, pointing the screwdriver at the shopkeeper.
Yeah, thank you. Always very nice to me.
Mantis wanders out. Mansell's with Ed in his library.
I think the history behind Riley's bogeyman might allay your fears about the Mantis house. Her villain's name is Bloody Bones, and he lived in 50 Berkeley Square.
Ed lays pages out from an old book.
In 1840, Sir Robert Warboys heard the tale of a parlourmaid who'd seen the spectral presence and had been driven insane. He wanted to disprove the haunting, so armed with a shotgun, he went and spent the night in the attic room.
Ed lays an old handwritten account down.
Did he say anything?
The house was woken at midnight when a shot rang out. They found Warboys dead from fright.
You don't believe it, but it still killed him.
Chandler's on the roof of HQ, gazing out across the lit-up skyscrapers of the city. Ed and Mansell.
Finally, in 1887, two sailors named Edward Blunden and Robert Martin sought shelter for the night by breaking into the now abandoned house.
What do they see?
A little girl in a kilt, a formless black mass, an evil presence that generates electric shocks. Depends on who you ask.
It expects everybody to say the same thing.
If it were real, then yes, but it's not. So you get lots of different stories.
Thanks.
Mansell rises to go, then stops in his tracks.
Then why have the stories in the first place? Why that house?
What a very good question.
Miles looks in on Morgan.
Sorry, I stormed out like that.
Well, I hope I didn't make things worse.
No, I feel much better. Maybe I should shout at him more often.
You know, there's a loyalty between you that most couples would love to have. But the fact is, you're not married, and D.I. Chandler is free to make his own choices.
What are you saying? I shouldn't care what happens to him?
I think you should care less. If you leave him be, he won't push you away.
Hope you're not charging me for this.
No, it's friendly advice.
Miles joins Chandler on the roof.
Leave a trail of breadcrumbs for me next time, will you?
I know you thought I was wrong to try and save Blythe. And you're right. Walking out in front of a gunman doesn't bother me. It doesn't frighten me the way it should.
I was a bit harsh. Riley would cry at your funeral, and Kent, actually. Kent more than anyone.
It is possible that there's a person in this world that's right for me. But the thought of asking her to go on a, you know, it terrifies me.
I know it seems that girls can do more damage than bullets, but it's not true.
Yeah, but it's the way I am. It's the way I've always been. But it's not the way I want to be.
Well, whatever happens, you know I'll stand by you.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Well, enough of this girl talk. We got work to do.
Chandler smiles amiably. A figure stands on a rooftop surveying the tower bridge area in the front room. Head bursts in on Mark and Chandler.
Berkeley Square.
Come in, sit down.
What's Berkeley Square got to do with us?
Who would dare to spend the night in 50 Berkeley Square when it was guaranteed to send you to your death or insane?
Ed, you have to get to the point.
Harry Price was Britain's foremost ghost hunter. He discovered that the house was originally used by counterfeiters. The story of Bloody Bones was used to explain away the noise of the printing press.
That's all great, but what's it got to do with us?
The bogeyman is always used to make people behave. If you can't get someone to do as they're told, all you have to do is invoke the name of Bloody Bones. Fear always works.
If you won't go to sleep, he'll pluck out your eyes. If you won't eat your dinner, he'll take you away and devour you. And if you trespass, he scares the life out of you.
They're being punished. All the victims did something wrong and they're being punished.
Sasha made crank calls and her phone was jammed into her throat.
Blythe scared people with a gun, so he was forced into a gunfight. Ronald graffitied walls, so he was bled for paint.
It all fits.
Spree killers typically have histories of lodging formal complaints. Their frustration grows if they feel they're not being taken seriously. This is the source of their alienation.
So who was complaining about these kids?
Sasha Lowood, nuisance calls, complaint made by Dave Watney, caretaker at Carpenter Estate.
Blythe, hold on.
Nothing.
Check the Housing Association.
Anonymous complaint that Blythe is carrying a weapon, contravening his family's tenancy agreement.
Look up Ronald.
The team crowd round Riley's PC.
It's a Housing Association again. Complaints from Dave Watney about having to clean off graffiti. He also spoke to the local PCSO.
So Mantis isn't your man, it's this Dave Watney.
Damn it, I know that name.
Doesn't matter. Dave Watney's dead.
The figure creeps along the rooftops in his mask.
Dave Watney was carrying an elderly resident shopping up the stairs to the top floor because the lifts had been vandalised again. He died on the fourth floor from a massive heart attack. His family blamed the Housing Association for not taking a firmer stance with troublesome residents, and the inquest was held yesterday.
Inquest? Morgan was at Dave Watney's inquest. I want to talk to Morgan again.
Chandler points at Kent. Morgan's on the phone in her room as Kent strolls to the door.
I know you've been trying to call, and yeah, I'm at the police station. Well, they have three so far. They seem to think so.
Morgan glances over her shoulder to see Kent.
Sorry, do you want something?
Who are you talking to?
It's a personal call.
Put the phone down. Boss wants to speak to you. Now.
Sorry, I've got to go.
Kent follows Morgan with his eyes as she walks out past him. Miles and Chandler talk with her again.
Dave Watney was an alcoholic. He fought for years against the disease, but it kept dragging him and his loved ones down.
Did you agree with the family that the teenagers on the estate were out of control and caused the stress that led to his heart attack?
No. He loved his job, and he never mentioned the kids on the estate to me. I think the family were looking for a reason, someone to blame. But Dave had heart disease, and that's what killed him.
Who else was at the inquest?
His wife, Cindy, and his son, Luke.
How old is Luke Watney?
17.
What's he like?
Luke had a difficult upbringing, but he's never let it hold him back. He's a tough kid with a good heart.
The leering top hatted man flashes up, Kent sifting through Ed's file as Chandler leaves Morgan.
I hope you find him.
We won't, don't worry. It'll be over soon.
Thank you.
Can I talk to you, sir?
If you're quick.
I'm concerned about Morgan Lamb.
I know you are, but not dying isn't exactly proof of complicity.
It seems to me that if I were a spree killer on a rampage, I'd need to stay one step ahead of the police at all times, and the best way to do that would be to have someone on the inside. So Morgan gets attacked, but then you take her home, only that's no good to her, so she gets attacked again, and this time she stays here. She's safe here, so no one watches her. She's free to move around, listen to what's going on, and report back.
Report to whom?
Look, we've just accepted her version of events, but what if she's involved with Luke Watney? What if she agreed with him that the kids on that estate tortured his father to death? She might have been on his side all along.
You think Morgan is helping Luke Watney to exact revenge?
I do. I have a precedent. After Starkweather killed her parents and sister, Karen Ann Fugate repeatedly lied to neighbours and police to cover up all the murders. She would do anything for him.
I think you're wrong.
You're making a mistake.
Oh.
You can't see it because you don't want to. Because you're clearly attracted to her.
What
did you say? What have you got against Morgan? You've obviously got a problem with her. What is it?
Just a feeling.
Chandler turns and pings his wristband. He rounds back on Kent, blinking angrily.
I'm going to assume that your feelings, down to the fact that you've been on duty for over 36 hours. Fatigue is clouding your judgment.
Chandler turns on his heel and struts off, leaving Kent clutching the folder.
Yes, sir.
Chantel opens the door to a SWAT cop.
Elsa, my armed ride is here. Do you want to lift home?
This is legal ribbon, used by lawyers, otherwise known as red tape. This is a connection between Morgan and the other deaths. Because whatever she says about him being a lovely boy, I think Luke Watney tried to strangle her because she wouldn't speak out about his father's death. The spree started on the day of the inquest. That was the trigger, the sense of injustice.
But Mantis had his first spree 10 years ago. We've just had an intermission.
If it was Mantis, then the next victim will be somebody in Miss Thompson's class. Someone like Chantal Essien.
She's taken care of.
Good. And if it's Luke Watney, then the next victim will be someone that Dave Watney complained about, Riley?
Well, there's one left, the lift vandal who left Watney to climb the stairs to his death. He complained about her on 5 separate occasions. Her name is Elsa Durham.
Be safe here, Chantal.
The two girls embrace beside the police squad car.
You too, Elsa.
I'll be fine.
Pretty blonde Elsa strolls off across the estate, watched all the while by the masked figure from the roof above. A woman in a black and white movie screams.
We've had a positive sighting of Calvin Mantis returning to his house. He'll remain under surveillance until it's safe to detain him. Contact Dr. Mortlake now.
Do we have to go back to the house?
Is there a problem?
No. No problem.
Come on, Miles, let's pay Luke Watney a visit.
Mansell dials his phone as they go. Just with the Mantis crime scene flash up, Ed wanders to the incident board as Riley works at her desk. Hands in his pockets, Ed surveys the victim profiles.
That's my work.
Yeah, you did good, Ed.
I did, didn't I? I made a difference.
Yeah, all because of a ghost story.
We all have to live with ghosts. We have to make room for them.
Uniformed police wait outside Mantis's boarded-up house as Mansell, Kent, and a psychiatrist edge along the hall inside. In the dark living room, they find Mantis eating popcorn as he watches a black-and-white film on a cine projector.
Calvin, you have to come with us.
After the movie.
What's he watching?
London After Midnight.
Kent leans towards the psychiatrist at his side, eyeing the old film.
If he watches this, won't that set him off?
As he takes in the leering man in the top hat on the projection screen. The projector beam fades into the dazzling headlights of Chandler's Land Rover pulling up on the estate by the flats.
So this is where Luke Watney had his difficult upbringing.
And his father died climbing the stairs because Elsa Durham vandalised the lifts.
The figures hauling Elsa face down up the stairs by her ankles, her head smashing on the steps.
What floor do the Watneys live on?
The ground floor.
Good thing. What's that noise?
Chandler and Miles enter the stairwell. They rush up towards the figure. The figure hurls Elsa down the stairs at Chandler and Miles coming up.
Oh,
Jeez.
Right, I've got it. You go, go! Ambulance, quick!
Miles barks into his mobile. Chandler rushes up the stairwell and out through a fire door onto the rooftop. He peers around corners warily, the city skyline sparkling behind him. Walking cautiously towards some metal steps, Chandler climbs to a higher level. Chandler rounds a corner to find the figure at the edge of the roof.
There's nowhere to go, Luke. I just want to talk. Can we talk?
Rounding to face Chandler with the mask still on, the figure flexes his fingers inside his leather gloves, then tightens them into a fist as he steps forward.
We know about your father. He was a good man. And I know you're not a monster, Luke. You're just someone who's been through hell.
Luke backs towards the edge.
You'll never make it. It's too far. I can help. Wait, don't!
Luke leaps from the roof, flailing as he panics, landing on a slow heap. Mantis's burn stops. Kent, Mansell, and the psychiatrist look on as Mantis carefully turns off the projector, removes the reel of film, and picks up the long screwdriver. They reach for their heavy, long-handled maglights and rise from their chairs as they watch him cross the room and hunch over a film canister. Chandler and Miles rush to where Luke fell. He's gone.
Where the hell is he?
You sure this is where he fell?
Well, he's fallen four stories. It's not possible.
Anything's possible if you're a bogeyman.
Bogeymen don't bleed, do they?
They set off following a trail of blood across the car park. Mantis stalks towards Mansell, clutching the film canister to his chest.
I liked it.
Really?
Yeah. It's a classic.
Mantis regards Mansell with bloodshot, unblinking eyes. He holds the film canister out to Mansell.
I want you to be his guardian. Yeah. This is the last copy of London After Midnight. Take care of it.
I will. I promise.
All right, Doc. Let's go home.
Chandler and Miles burst into a flat and follow the trail of blood along the hallway, stepping over the figure's mask. They find Luke's mother cradling him in her arms.
Oh, please help me! Help my son! Luke's hurt!
I'm sorry I didn't kill Mork.
The sun rises over Docklands as clouds scud across the sky. Morgan stares out of her window at HQ, then turns as Chandler enters behind her.
Oh, Morgan? I've arranged a car to take you home.
Can't you take me?
I'm afraid not. I've still got a lot to do here.
No, of course I understand. Thank you.
She steps towards him, smiling. He hangs his head bashfully.
But, when this is all over, I'd like to see you again.
You don't ask many people out, do you?
You can can see why.
Smiling, she reaches her hand up and lays it on his cheek tenderly. Their eyes close as she kisses his mouth. Alone in the lavatories, Chandler closes his eyes and brings his hand to his face. His smile wilts as he regards himself in the mirror and runs his finger around his shirt collar. He stretches his wristband, then relaxes with a smile. He strolls back to Miles's desk.
What happened to you?
Nothing.
Well, whatever it is, you look much happier.
Well,
it's going to take some getting used to.
Well, Mantis is on his way back to Bedlam, and I'm on my way to my divorce party. Who's going to join me?
You go ahead. We've still got to talk to Cindy Watney.
Are we going
to
arrest her?
It's just an informal chat for now. There's no evidence to suggest she was involved.
Well, by my watch, this shift ended 40 hours ago, so you can all have a drink.
Oh, I'm going to go home soon and see the kids. After 40 hours, I'll have my own crime scene to deal with. Kim,
thanks. Not until you've spoken to Morgan. I think she deserves an apology.
Sir.
Morgan's on the phone again as Kent bursts back into her room.
Morgan.
I have to go. You know, I'll give you a ring later, Mum. Well, stop worrying. Bye.
I wanted to apologise to you.
Why?
I shouldn't have been so harsh on you in your interview. Shouldn't have spied on you. Guess being the backup isn't really me.
Perhaps it's more you than you think.
Kent's affable air sours as he meets her piercing gaze. He storms out of the room, leaving the door wide open. Sitting on a bench outside, Luke's mum sees Morgan. Luke's mum's eyes dart furtively as Morgan's door closes. She bites her lip, then smiles at the two officers nearby.
Could I get a cup of tea, please?
Yeah, okay. Of course, right.
Luke's mum lets herself into Morgan's room.
Cindy. Morgan.
Morgan embraces her.
I'm so sorry about Luke.
Me too. So I'm glad I found you.
Luke's mum looks in a mirror.
Hey, here you go.
No, thank you, not before breakfast.
All right, more for me then.
You've got two, three, six.
Sorry, I've had a thought about the archive. I think perhaps the time has come to engage the services of an assistant to share the weight. My very own sergeant, a Miles of the archive.
I'm one of a kind, thank you very much.
Something's wrong.
Chandler leaves Ed and Miles and rushes from the incident room up the stairs to where uniformed officers crowd the door to Morgan's room.
Sir, what do you need to do? What's going on?
Excuse me, I've got to get... Let me get through!
Chandler winces as he forces through the crowd into Morgan's room and gawps at the sight of Morgan lying on her back, glassy-eyed, blood streaked across her chest. Two officers restrain Luke's mum as she flails on the floor, gnashing her teeth nearby. Kent comes in and sees the shattered glass strewn around Morgan and the blood trickling from her mouth. A shaft of sunlight hits Chandler's face as he looks down at Morgan and recalls the kiss and her hand on his face. Flashback to his hand lying palm up in hers as she slid the elastic band onto his wrist. Ed is hauled back, crestfallen from the doorway as Chandler staggers out, steadying himself on the doorframe, while agitated cops mouth demands. Miles pushes a path clear for Chandler through the crowd and ushers him clear into the hallway before turning back to deal with the fracas. Dazed and blinking, Chandler walks forward along the hall, stepping awkwardly and uneasily, seemingly off balance. He steadies himself and walks through the shafts of sunlight falling through the open doorways. He vanishes into the gloom beyond the arch at the end of the corridor. ITFC, audio description.